Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO, your home to the Minnesota Twins, who are off all, I never remember, 5 days off for the All-Star break, but they are. Joining us in the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, I've been anxious to talk to him since this weekend series and watching what went on with the Minnesota Twins, a guy that played for the Minnesota Twins and the Oakland A's and was an All-Star MVP and a world champion and much more, Terry Steinbach, nice enough to join us. Terry, L.A., man, they didn't pack it for the home run derby, maybe because it's a different time difference out there, but you played in L.A. in the World Series in the famous Gibson home run series. What is it like to play out there in L.A.?
It's a lot of fun. I mean, L.A. is what it is. I mean, exactly like you're saying, people leave early. It's all about the clock. It's about the freeway. It's about rush hour and everything, but they do have a extremely rich tradition, you know, about baseball.
What was your favorite stadium to play in outside of your home stadium?
You know, Mac, yeah. I mean, to me, Camden Yards was one of the first stadiums that did a beautiful stadium, beautiful locker room, beautiful batting cages, and on top of it, made a beautiful area all the way around Camden Yards. So that was one of the first that, as a player, you know, we stayed at the hotel, you walked to a couple of restaurants on your way to the field, grabbed a quick bite to eat, went to the field, played your game. After the game, you worked your way back to the hotel, stopped for a few refreshments. But the whole area around the stadium, the whole community was very nice. You know, so it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, they did urban ballpark. But all right, the Twins fall on their face against the White Sox and struggled before that, mainly in the form of pitching. They've given them a lot of runs over the last couple of weeks. And obviously, you know, we look immediately at the starting pitchers and the relief pitchers, and we complain about the bullpen and all these things. I always wonder sometimes, is it the bullpen or is it the fact the starters don't pitch longer into a game, and anybody can have a good bullpen if they have good starters? I don't know. What have you seen over the last 2 weeks?
Well, I just think that, yes, it's been a combination of things. I think it's proven that the bullpen can be susceptible. They've blown some games. You know, they've given up some runs in bad times. And, you know, again, that's going to cost you. Now, on the flip side of that, when it's a team, when you got 25 guys working together, if you see your bullpen struggling, that's kind of, on some of the teams that I've been on, that's when the starters kind of grab their bootstraps a little bit and said, all right, I'm going to take us, you know, a solid 6-7, maybe 8 innings, maybe even a complete game, you know, to take the pressure off the bullpen a little bit, just to give them a chance to breathe. And what's happening the last 2 weeks is the bullpen has struggled a little bit. The starters are not going as long as I think people would like them to see. And that may be by design. I mean, we've had many conversations about the analytics. None of us agree with it. I don't quite understand it. You know, pitchers get that one time, one and a half times to the order, and okay, we got to take them out, whether they're dealing or not. You know, the computer says you're done.
Yeah, I for sure. And the reason I think about it a lot is I saw Jim Cott going here to get his number retired. And when you start looking at his numbers and how many complete games he had, and you go, well, he must have wore out pretty soon. No, he pitched 25 years in the big leagues. I just don't know, Terry, but I'm very interested in what you have to say about that, because some of the guys, Burt Blylevin's another one. I mean, they have complete games, but they also have really long careers, which tells you it didn't affect their arm like we tend to think it does right now in terms of how long we let guys pitch. Do you think everybody's just built differently, or do you think that at this day and age, guys, I mean, whether they say, you know, they might go in there and say, I'm planning on pitching a complete game, but nobody plans on pitching a complete game anymore.
Well, let's throw another guy from Iowa. Let's throw Nolan Ryan in there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
45 years old, and he's throwing 100 miles an hour, right?
Yeah. So I think it's a combination of things, Mike. I think the veteran guys that we're talking about, those old guys, when they took the ball, Burt's a great guy to talk to about it, and Jim was, too. You know, it was their game. They had they're going the whole game. There was no intention of coming out of that game. So I think they were programmed, number one, to go a whole game. Two, I think they condition themselves to figure out how to go a whole game. And I think you got the two things going against us right now, that pitchers, I mean, are programmed right now. I mean, two times through the order. I mean, we're in the World Series, and the horses are going four innings, you know, and I'm scratching my head at that. I mean, you know, we always had a pitcher or two that, you know, you get to the fourth, fifth inning, often they're looking over the shoulders of the bullpen like, hey, Skip, you know, okay, I got my five innings. You know, I think I'm done here. But
right.
And I think you're right. I think they need to be programmed differently. And then I always hate to say this, but you dump the – and I have nothing against money, Mike. Nothing. Yeah. I think the players should make as much as they can. But as an organization, you dump that much money into a guy.
I know.
Specifically talking pitchers here. We don't want to take the chance of blowing this guy
out. Yeah, it's counter to your investment, right? I mean, you spend a lot of money, so now you play them less.
Exactly. And I can remember every time we ran into an issue in Oakland days, you know, Dave Stewart said, give me the ball, boys. You know, he wanted to change that losing streak into a winning streak. Brad Radke, when I was catching for the Twins, was that guy. If we were on the bubble a little bit, give the ball to Brad. Everybody knows, hey, this is our chance to win. We're going to win this, and let's get back on the positive side of winning again.
Okay, so I'm going to give you another. I'm going to give you the edited version when I asked another guy about that, and the guy's name was Jack Morris. And Jack used to say, when he saw Sparky come out, he would be beside himself, and he'd say, you're going to put that blinkety-blinkety-blink into save my game? You want him to pitch instead of me?
Let's go to the 10th inning of the World Series.
Yes, exactly.
Now,
which is one of the greatest stories of all time. But did you ever have conversations like that where you're sitting out there and La Russa comes out and the starting pitcher says, you got to be kidding me?
Yeah, you know, and that's what you want. I mean, the managers want that kind of, hey, if it's the first part of the season, hey, I'm taking you out because I want you fresh in October, you know. So there is some rhyme or reason that goes on, but you want that guy that wants to be out, that wants the ball, and knows he can go a solid 7, 8, 9 innings and get that win for the club.
Terry Steinbach is our guest. So, Terry, with that in mind, if you're playing GM for the Twins right now, what are you looking at? Is it just bullpen arms? What are you looking at right now?
I think it's really, really hard for a ball club when you lose games in that 8th and 9th inning. I mean, those are tough pills to swallow. When the season's over, regardless of where you finish, up, down, sideways, whatever, you always look back and say, hey, how about those 5, 7, 9, 10, 12 blown games that we gave up in the 7th, 8th, 9th inning? Those are the ones that I think come back to haunt you. So I think if I'm the GM right now, I would try to solidify that part of the bullpen right now. Try to get something going where we got three consistent guys, you know, 7th, 8th, and a closer there. Grant looks like he potentially can be that guy. So, you know, when you have that lead, you know, that's the one you can't give up. And the winning teams that I played on and the winning teams that beat us, I mean, you got the 7th, 8th, 9th inning and the other team got the lead. Let's go to the Yankees with Rivera. I mean, forget it, boys. I mean, as much as we want to beat Rivera, that's a tough task.
Yeah, it was a couple of flamethrowers right in front of him usually as well. Do you think had they kept Taylor Rogers, that would have drastically changed where they're at right now?
You know, hindsight is tough, Maxie. I mean, yes, if we calculate that he is going to do exactly what he's doing in San Diego with the Twins, oh, absolutely we shouldn't have given him up, and especially what we got for him, you know.
Yeah.
But you don't know that. You know, when you're sitting there in February, March, April, and you got to pull the plug on a deal like that, you know, you hope that the guys you're getting are going to do well, and you might – maybe you had a ceiling on Rogers that didn't think he could, you know, break through that ceiling, and obviously he's proven things wrong. And also, I'm always in favor of guys getting a different look. And I'm going to throw, you know, the big one out there, David Ortiz. He was a teammate of mine, and man, we couldn't keep that guy on the field on the Metrodome. You know, I mean, he was big, and the turf was hard on his knees, and he was kind of broken up anyway, and he goes to Boston. I mean, literally, I think we gave him the Boston, and oh my God, he's an MVP and he's a Hall of Famer.
A Hall of Famer.
The rest is history.
Yeah. I mean, did you see anything from him? I mean, obviously you knew he could hit, but he sprayed the ball more than he hit just for power. And, you know, he'll say that he started swinging from his hips or from his heels when he went to Boston, and they said, have that, but that's tough part because a left-hander to hit a lot of home runs as you know. Did you see high potential when he left? What did you think?
I'm going to be honest with you, Max. You know, because he was playing on turf, and he was broke a lot. I mean, you know, the turf back then, we didn't have the good soft turf that they have now. It was harder. His knees were hurting. His ankles were hurting. It was tough to keep him on the field. And if you're not feeling good, you know, I mean, if you're sore, you're not going to be able to perform. So I think for him going to Fenway, getting him on natural grass, number one. Number two, he gets off to a good start, and the organization loves him. The fans love him, and he turns into that leader of the Red Sox, and he brings home those World Series, and anybody knows, you know, the East Coast team, if you can bring home a World Series
and break the curse in the process, right?
The president, you know.
Yeah, and he could, man. He had some kind of charm about him. Now, Gary Sanchez is a catcher. It looks like with Jeffers out, they're going to need another one for the next 8 weeks, and either from within or somewhere else. Who would you identify, knowing what you know about Sanchez, what does he need with him to complement him if he becomes your number one catcher?
Well, I think he's going to need durability because, you know, let's face it, you're going to go down the second half right now. You don't really want to be breaking in another guy and have another guy have to learn the rotation. So we're going to have to get a lot of games out of him. So he's going to have to be durable, number one. And then two, you know, he's going to have to perform. You know, and it might not necessarily be all offensive. You know, everybody thinks, you got to hit the home runs, you got to drive the guys in. Behind the plate, if you can make that pitcher feel comfortable when he's out there throwing, that's the number one job of the catcher. When that starting pitcher gets out and the reliever comes in, now his job is to make the next guy feel as comfortable as he can, like he's the most important thing in the world.
And kind of like, I got you, huh? When you come in, don't worry about it. I'll put the right number down and you hit it.
Exactly, and that's part on the field, that's part off the field, that's part in the airplane, flying to places, that's part taking a guy out to dinner. You know, you want that pitcher to have all the confidence in the world, and you got a guy in third base, and in our area, you want to throw that fork ball, throw it. I got it.
Yep.
It's not getting by me. I mean, if that's your outfit, you throw it every dang time. I'm going to block it. We'll throw the guy out at first. Don't worry about it. As compared to, you know, the pitcher's got a little reservation out there about, hey, can that guy block? And I'm not comfortable throwing to this guy. My out pitch is this pitch. And that leads to not throwing the best pitch in that particular situation. So he's just going to have to get comfortable with those guys, and he's going to have to catch. And let's face it, he's going to have to suck it up. You know, those dog days of August come up. You know, that hard stretch, you know, sprinting into September, he's going to have to be out there.
Explain, you know, we saw what the White Sox did to him, and that is your manager, your connection to your teams is Tony La Russa, and he's managing the White Sox again. Of course, they won it last year, and now they're knocking on the door again. He hasn't really given in to all the analytics of baseball to the degree that others have. What have you seen from him in his comeback with the White Sox?
I got to go spend a little bit of time with him on Saturday. You know, they still let old guys go see old managers, you know. So I talked to him for a while, and yeah. He's all about winning, all right? What's winning baseball, okay? And to me, winning baseball is, and this is a philosophy that he drilled into us, was you get a guy on second, leadoff double. You get them over, you get them in. I don't care how. You want to bunt, bunt. You want to hit and run, hit and run. You know, you want to hit the ball the other way, do it. But you have to get that guy to third. Next guy coming up. I don't care how you get that guy in. Get him in. And that's what Tony really preaches, and that's what he's got the guys buying into. And, you know, they went through some injuries early. They had some guys underperforming early. But he seems to, you know, at least sprinting into the All-Star break, which he stresses a lot of. I'm sure they had meetings 7 to 10 days, you know, before the All-Star break. And his message was, look, guys, let's sprint into that thing. Let's make a point here. And he's got the guys playing well. Now the question is going to be, can those guys stay healthy? Can the guys keep doing what they're doing? But they're buying on to Tony's philosophy of winning baseball. And it was very evident last year, you know, how they won the division. It didn't pan out from that first round of playoffs, but he's got them doing it again.
Yeah, he's got some special players there with Tim Anderson and Abreu, and Robert looks like he's coming to his own. Jimenez is hurt. Obviously, Vaughn had a big series, but Seats and Lance Lynden pitched very well. But, I mean, when they put that thing out there and it's fortified, that's a pretty good roster.
Absolutely, and, you know, I think you're starting to see it. I don't know their exact stats. They took 3 out of 4 from Minnesota, I think, 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10, you know, their last 10 games. They put themselves right into contention going into the All-Star break, and that's more than you can ask for a manager. Now, he'll have his speech right after the All-Star break. I could probably say it verbatim, you know, hey, first half was great, way to go, pat yourself on the back, but we haven't done nothing yet, you know. So what we did in that first half won't mean anything if we don't continue to carry on in that second half.
Is his magic strategy, or is it the way he handles players?
It's the way he handles players. I mean, when you watch how many strategic moves that really impact a game through the course of 9 innings, there's really not that many. TK has said this many times. Tony has said it. Sparky said it. I mean, TK says the best game he's ever had is when he sits down and let the boys play.
Yeah.
So it's really how Tony communicates with the players. I can really remember him, you know, going around every game, you know, to every group of players. You know, you got the infielders are taking their ground, as the outfielders have a huddle out there, catchers were bebopping around, and he'd come to every group. How are we doing today? What do you guys think? And then, or he'll say, I'm really worried. What are you worried about today? Well, Steiny, you won 4 for 5 last night. That means you ain't going to be worth a crap today. You know, and he
found little challenge, huh?
Yeah, he found his ways to challenge you, you know, and he had different messages for all 25 guys. And I guarantee you that's the same way he's walking through batting practice during the White Sox BP.
Wow. Terry, always great to visit with you. And, you know, we'll do it again soon. I didn't even get a chance to talk to I got to ask this one last question, because you were an All-Star MVP. I've talked to you about it in the past. What is this like for a player to walk out there on the field tomorrow night when you're an All-Star?
It is fantastic. I did get to see Luis Arraez, and I congratulated him the other day on that, and I said, take it all in. I mean, it is, you know, the first time there, it's extremely intimidating, because all the superstars that you're admiring are your teammates. All those great hitters, you know, the Pucks, the Juniors, the Ripkins, the guys that you're trying to get out, you're in the lineup with them, you know?
Yeah.
And the rotation that you get to catch, I mean, it's like, oh, man, give me this thing all year.
Yeah.
You know? So, no, it's really great. It's a lot of fun. You know, when we played, it was meaningful because whoever won hosted, you know, got the advantage, you know, American League, National League for the World Series. But anyway, it's still fun. And I told Luis, enjoy the heck out of it. Take it all in, because it's going to be a very memorable experience for you.
For sure. Terry, thank you so much. Always fun.
Always a pleasure, Max. You take care.
You too. One of the best guy. I love having that guy on. Terry Steinbach breaking down all of it, because he can break down. He was a coach. He was a player. He was all those things. And he's from New Ulm, Minnesota, not far from Gaylord, Minnesota. So he gets a special dispensation as well. Take a break. I'll tell you, I went to the most memorable All-Star game that I ever attended when we come back. Stay with us. 20 years ago, the World Series was held, or the World Series, the All-Star game was held in Milwaukee. Bud Selig was the commissioner. It was a gift to Bud, and obviously their new stadium they had built there, Miller Park. And it was our way of saying, Commish, we owe you one. You've done a lot for us. Take the All-Star game. They would have got it anyway because it was a relatively new stadium. And I remember going with one Sid Hartman. He and I drove down to Milwaukee. My most memorable times with Sid Hartman. were not the times I spent with him on the air. And there were plenty of those, and there's lots of tapes that you can look at of those. We did a TV show together for 20 years, for crying out loud, with Pat Royce and Dark Star for 15 of them. And there was a lot of fun there. And we did a lot of sports huddles together, and we were on the radio a lot together. But the most fun I ever had with Sid Hartman was when I'd go places with him long distance in the car. He always had me drive because he didn't like driving if he didn't have to, but he always wanted to go in his car because he had all this stuff in his car. He didn't know where it was, but he knew it was in the car somewhere so that if he had to access it, he could find it somehow. And he didn't want to not have, you know, his tape recorder or his whatever. His car phone worked a certain way that he knew how it worked. And I remember we went there to that All-Star game. And it was kind of a big thing because the Twins were being recognized in this is when they had the turnaround in 2001, and now in 2002, they're one of the better teams in the American League. And Hunter gets the call, and Eddie Guardado, I believe, and A.J. Pierzynski were the ones that were got a chance to play. And we went there the night before when they were taking batting practice before the home run derby. And, I mean, those three guys were giddy. I mean, they were sheepish. They were, you know, what am I doing here kind of a thing. And they're going to have the home run derby. And I remember afterwards talking to A.J. Pierzynski about catching Mariano Rivera. And he said, Rivera just said to me, hey, just put the glove where you want it. Whatever you think, I'll hit it. Just set the glove up. Wherever you think this hitter's vulnerable, you put the glove there and don't worry, I'll do the rest. And that was Mariano Rivera, of course. And he said it was just amazing. All I did was set my glove up, and he'd throw the split finger, whatever he wanted, and he'd throw it where he wanted to. And then that was the game that Torrey Hunter made the catch on Barry Bonds. Took the home run away. Bonds grabs him as he's coming off the field. That was probably the signature moment. But there were a couple other things that happened during that. Number one was the night of the home run derby. There were parties afterwards. So Sid and I were going to go to the parties where Bud Selig was and Andy McPhail and all these people. And there was a torrential downpour. I mean, I'm talking about a gully washer. And the tents just weren't holding up. It was just terrible. Everybody had to go inside. And it was, you know, obviously it's an all-star celebration, except the thunderstorm was so big that you couldn't do anything with it. And it just opened up. The skies opened up. And there was nothing you could do about it. And then the next night they played the game. And in the midst of this, you may or may not recall, there was this amazing labor strife where they were talking about contracting the Minnesota Twins. Remember this? And so there were all this, there was this contentious feeling, and you had all Major League Baseball, all the high-end personnel were together. And they were beginning to try to negotiate out a deal, whatever that collective bargaining agreement was going to look like. And Andy McPhail was working, the former Twins general manager, was working with Bud Selig and Major League Baseball. And Sid was just doggedly at these parties trying to get to McPhail so he could get some kind of an inside scoop on what was going on with the Twins. And then when he got to McPhail, he wanted to talk to Selig because he knew Selig well, but it wasn't that easy. And Andy was running interference. And I mean, it was something to be seen. To watch Sid try to work his he wanted a scoop on the Twins contraction, and he was trying to get to Selig. Well, Selig was the most sought-after man in Milwaukee because the All-Star game, he was the commissioner, it was in his backyard, and that wasn't going to stop Sid. But the next night was the night that they had to call the game when it was a tie. So it's in his backyard and all these different things, and they have to call the game off as a tie because they didn't want to use in strained pitchers. And so it was, I mean, between the rainstorm and that, it was not a great moment for Major League Baseball, and it was the one time that Bud was going to have it in his hometown. I always liked Bud. I used to stop by the county stadium there. That's where he had his office, even as a commissioner. And his secretary was the same as Vince Lombardi's. And she moved over to him after Vince left the Packers. And he had newspapers everywhere in the office. He was like reading all the time and trying to figure out what the different beat writers were saying and the columnists and all those things. But it was always fun to visit with Bud. And the other thing I remember about that was they had this, the greatest moments in from each year, one signature moment. If they could find somebody to represent that year to be a symbol of it, they had, it was like MasterCard sponsored or something. So they were paying for all these people to come in. So 1991, for example, Jack Morris was there. And Jack was there to represent 10 innings, Twins win World Series. 1954 was represented by Willie Mays. Willie Mays, great catch, leads the Giants to the World Series. So you see, each year had a different, and either, you know, if that person was alive, they could be there, etc. And I remember Sid walking in, and Sid had always told me how Willie Mays, he knew Willie Mays. Willie Mays played here at Minneapolis and blah, blah, blah. And sometimes you thought that maybe Sid exaggerated just a touch. There were times when you would think that, you know, come on, you're 25 years old. How well did you're trying to tell me that Willie Mays took time and you were down at Nicollet Park, blah, blah, blah. So we walk into this room, and for some reason, there's not many media there, but all these unbelievable people are there. And Willie Mays, with God as my witness, turns around and he says, Sid Hartman, you took care of me back in Minneapolis in the 50s. You couldn't get the smile off of Sid's face, man. It was something. I'll tell you one other great story, one other great all-star story that pertains to the here and now when we come back. Mike Max Sports of the Max News Talk 830 WCCO. Mike Welch, tournament director of the 3M. Open will join us this half hour. But I wanted to tell you one more all-star story. So we're at this place. Sid and I are at this place. And it's a look back in history. And for some reason, it didn't get the publicity, I guess, that some of the other events around the all-star game got, because we walked in, there weren't many media, but there were all these high-end, like I said, Jack Morris, Willie Mays, the list went on and on. Jackie Robinson's daughter, I think, was there representing him. Whatever year it was, there was something. And then they had some ancillary people as it pertained to baseball. And one of the people that I ran into, that was, he just kind of, I don't know what his exact role was in the presentation, but all of a sudden I looked at him, I said, I know you. Even though I didn't know him, it was one of those, aha moments where you go, I know you. I know you. Like you get when you see somebody that you've seen on TV, or in this case, on the big screen. He was not a baseball player. He was not a manager. I don't know that he ever played organized baseball per se. But he did play the role of Shoeless Joe Jackson in Field of Dreams. His name was Ray Liotta. And he was, of course, more famous for his mafia movies than he was anything else. But he played Shoeless Joe Jackson in the movie Field of Dreams. And he just passed away at the age of 67 recently. And I loved Field of Dreams. And so when I saw him, I said, yeah, we got to do an interview. So I remember I had my recorder with me. And we went off to the side and we talked for a long time. Did a long interview with him about the movie and about baseball and what it meant to him. It's like, man, this is Ray Liotta, Shoeless Joe. And it was so cool because it was just one of those things that you stumbled into that you weren't even trying to find. And all of a sudden you're amongst all these people that represent greatness in one way, shape, or form. And he was one of them. And so we talked for quite a while. And I do believe, I probably shared this with him at that time, that when you talk about the comeback of baseball, because baseball had dipped, a lot of people look at 1998 and the home run derby that went on every night between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. But I would take it back a few years and say what really helped bring baseball back just as significant were the baseball movies that Kevin Costner made, Field of Dreams and Bull Durham. I think that those two movies did as much to romanticize baseball and became compelling to a bigger audience than just the hardcore baseball fans. I think those two movies did something that was significant in bringing back the fans to Major League Baseball after the dips and the work stoppage, the early 90s, and all those things that went with it. So that's what I think. When we come back, Mike Welch, he's running the 3M tournament. It's going to be hot out there. How do they compensate for that? And how do they compensate for not enough big-name players out there with this LIV Tour? We'll ask him all of the above when we return. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. We bring you the best, the most current, the things people are talking about. We're talking about Mike Welch, as tournament director for the 3M tournament going on at the TPC in Blaine, of course, this week. And they have seen a lot between COVID and back since this since this tour stop originated here in Minnesota, and he joins us now. Mike, thank you for joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with the heat. Obviously, if you have a lot of golf tournaments, a lot of them are going to be played in extreme heat. We're just not used to it in Minnesota all the time. So I'm sure there's lots of protocols in place. But for fans that are wondering if they go out there, if it gets into the 90s, what do they need to worry about? What are ways they can compensate for it?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, the weather's looking a little bit better towards the end of the week, Maxie, but, you know, we have many cooling areas on course, many areas that are air-conditioned. We have the M Health Fairview Family Care Center for younger families. We have the 3M Science Dome for older families. Both of those areas are air-conditioned. Of course, we have multiple concession stands with water and Gatorade, but if you bring a water bottle, we do have, courtesy of 3M and LK, our hydration station, which refills your water bottles. And we're trying for 20,000 refills of water bottles, which will help our sustainability platform. So tons of shade, tons of water, tons of AC in different areas, certainly something for everybody. So we fully expect a big crowd that can have the sunshine, but also some cooling effects as well.
Yeah, what's different about a golf stop, too, is that you can move around. So you're not in the bleachers, and you are the victim of wherever the sun and how, you know, how intense it is. You can move around at a golf tournament. You can walk around. You can find shade. And many times when it's breezy, it's not nearly as oppressive as one would think.
Today was the hottest day we're going to have all week, and it was closed to spectators today, but there were some players' families and caddies' families walking around, and they were saying the exact same thing, Mike, that you find shade for a little bit, and you're fine. But it's going to be warm, and us Minnesotans, we're not too great with extreme cold and warmth, but we're going to be okay by the end of the week, it looks like.
Yeah, we adjust, we adapt, that's what we do here, for sure. The live factor, as you see it, LIV, and what it does, obviously it can affect your marketing depending on who's going to show up and who's going to be there and all those things. But from where you sit, does it have a lot of bearing on the way you go about your business and setting up a tournament like this?
Doesn't affect the way we set up the course or our tournament one bit, Mike. Does it affect fan perception and consumer behavior? Maybe. You know sports. I mean, sports names and faces change all the time. We're experiencing it in golf a little bit quicker than I think anybody expected, right? There's 13 players that are on that tour that were in our field last year. Whether we like it or not, it's affecting our field. What I can tell you is that the quality of golfer in the 3M Open field this year will not suffer. The tour, the Korn Ferry Tour, the Canadian Tour, the level of talent is at an all-time high. I think some of the things we have to remember, Mike, in 2018, the Korn Ferry Tour Player of the Year was Sungjae Im. In 2019, it was Scottie Scheffler. 3 years later, that kid's number one in the world. And so who is the next Sungjae Im? Who's the next Scottie Scheffler? And we think that they might be in our field this week. We have some great sponsor exemptions. We have some great young talent like Davis Riley. There are some really good players in this field.
A lot of them to play long, huh?
Oh my goodness. I mean, these kids hit the ball like you wouldn't believe. And you know, our course is playing firm and fast because of obviously there hasn't been a lot of rain, Mike. But at the same time, the rough and the fescue is the highest I've ever seen it. We had a couple of folks we were talking to on the Monday Pro-Am today that said, I can see the grass. The rough is growing three different ways, so I literally can't hit in the rough, otherwise I'm going to be penalized. And I think you know, we started out in 2019 with Matthew Wolf at 21 under par. Last year, Cameron Champ was at 15 under par. So our course is certainly playing a little bit tougher for these pros.
Yeah, I heard Jason Day talking about it today and the anticipation. How it's kind of fascinating how the pros anticipate it because they look at the weather forecast, right? And as they're playing around today, they say, okay, it plays like this today, but it will play like this on Thursday based on what we're seeing in the forecast. And you forget about all that scouting that goes into it and the formulas that that go into it, particularly for these golfers when they're playing. A stroke here, a stroke there can mean just about everything. But when you set up a course like this for a tour stop, who dictates what? Who says this is, from pin placement to, how you're going to trim the rough? Are there people out there like 8 weeks in advance from the PGA Tour who tells you what to do and how to do it?
There is. I think it's a great collaboration between three parties, Mike. It's certainly PGA Tour rules and agronomy who come out here, to your point, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 8 weeks, and then 4 weeks. They make three different stops to just check on the course, start to look at pin positions. It's our friends at TPC Twin Cities who run this course day in and day out. And then, as you well know, there's a certain gentleman, Hollis Kavner, who has a say every once in a while on where the pin positions are. And so, I think those three parties put their heads together and try to come up with with the four best pin locations that they can find on the course. And you know, it's a sort of a weird science, a mad science, but there's a method to all the madness. And I saw an early pin sheet for Sunday, and let's just say that I think that there's a couple new pins that fans will be really intrigued on and maybe have not seen before.
Do players lobby a lot to say, hey, on this course, you should be doing this with the pins?
I'm not sure if I hear so much the pins, but you know, all the rage is, you know, drivable par fours, right? We saw that a lot this past weekend at the Open Championship. Now that course was playing as fast as any course we've ever seen. But you know, we have a few holes, number 7 and number 16, that if you move the tees up, you can drive that thing in one and, you know, potentially have an eagle putt. And I think there's certainly some feedback from the players around, hey, this is a great drivable par four, maybe not so much. And so I think, again, that collaboration, you know, between Hollis and a few other entities make those conversations happen. But yeah, I mean, we certainly want to listen to the players. I think that they know golf and know the course the best, and so I really do appreciate that relationship.
3M Tournament Director Mike Welch is our guest. 3M Tournament going on all week. Aside from, if you're going to say, well, people like to follow a certain player, you know, name recognition, whatever, do the fans in general want to see birdie golf? Do they want to see them challenged more? What does the spectator want? What have you learned?
I think as far as golf goes, Mike, they want to see birdies. You know, I think many of us normal golfers don't get birdies every time we golf, so they want to see what the heck they look
like. We want to make sure that it actually happens, right?
It actually happens, yeah. Right? I mean, and what the heck is an eagle? Can we see an eagle? So I think that, you know, they certainly want to see that. I think as equally as important, what our fans or the fan that we're trying to get to our golf tournament really cares about more than just golf. They want to see good golf, but they want an incredible food and beverage experience. They want incredible experiences for their family. They want to know that what they're going to means more than something. And you know this very well about our tournament and all PGA tournaments. We're all charitable endeavors. We're going to give over $1.5 million back to charity when this golf tournament is done on Sunday. And I think people that know that a portion of their ticket cost is going towards that is meaningful to them. And so I think that we want to make sure that we're talking about that and highlighting that message. So, you know, I think it's a combination of all three. They want to see great golf and some good scoring. They want a great experience for them, their friends, their family, and they want to know that their dollar's going somewhere, especially in times where, boy, dollars being stretched more than it ever has before.
For sure. Mike, thank you so much. I'll see you out there tomorrow. And, you know, Hollis has always promised me that I get a shot at one of those, that there's some big bass lurking in some of those ponds, and when the tournament's over, I can come out and fish it. But he's never been true to that promise. Do I just need to stay on him about that, or what?
Mike, no, just Mike, call me.
Okay. We'll yeah, now I know what to do. That's why I brought that up.
I'll get my 10-year-old who knows that lake better than anybody. He'll show you the spot.
10-year-olds always do. Mike, thank you so much. I'll see you out there this week.
Thanks, Maxie. Have a good night.
You bet. Mike Welch, Tournament Director, 3M. When we come back, we'll talk St. Paul Saints baseball to General Manager Derek Scherer. Why on earth did they call that game off yesterday? What was that all about? And what's he seeing when Big Miguel Sano gets in the box? We'll ask him about that and much more on Sports to the Max on News Talk 830 on WCCO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon an office so dreary, Wendy's HR presentation made everyone weary.
Was it a bore?
A snore. Could have used more charm, for sure.
That's it?
Wendy opened Canva, looking ecstatic. She began to work her magic.
Docs, prints, presentations galore. All in one design. Not dull anymore.
The next day, Wendy wowed the crowd. They clapped loud.
I feel so proud.
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.